It's Kiva. It's 8 o'clock on Monday night. Do you know where your Twitter mom's at?
Oh, it's Kiva on Indie Views. It's Kiva Artist Interview.
Right now.
On Butterflies
Radio.
Where it's all indie, all the
Welcome to Butterflies Radio Indie Views Artist Spotlight. And I'd like to say, welcome to WWIR Worldwide Indie Radio. Yes, Butterflies Radio now has call letters. And I am so happy to introduce you tonight to Poena Sudarth. Her music's described as thrasher bluegrass by friend and producer Smoke of Old Dominion. Her music is heavily influenced by the hip-hop artists she listened to and hung out with in the Pacific Northwest when first starting out, though her sound is also clearly influenced by legends like Janis Joplin, Jeff Buckley, and Billie Holiday. After spending years on the road with bands, writing and recording songs from her debut solo EP, Happy Horror, Poena has settled down, for now, in Los Angeles. And here's one of the songs off that EP, Natural Disaster, which is also the artist choice of the night.
I am a natural disaster. You say I'm unpredictable. I am a natural disaster, baby, but I won't sink but swim. Oh yeah. You say I'm unpredictable. I am a natural disaster, baby, but I won't sink but swim.
I don't wanna leave my home or talk to anyone. I don't wanna wait and see. I want the world now. I want it for free.
Yeah, da 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 da. Come has been my regular vitamin C. Oh, I am a totally catastrophic of a diamond mentality.
Oh, a world within an apocalypse. The government that's about to fall. I'm getting fixed with a strange job. You can send my taxes direct to hell. Yeah.
Now, where do you live now? I was trying to read your bio and figure out where you were at now. Are you? It's like, I'm trying to do the puzzle. Is she in Arizona? Is she back in Portland?
Well, I'm all over the place. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I kind of tell people that I live between LA and Portland.
But that's a good place.
Yeah. It's kind of far to be living between, but I'm living in LA now. I just moved down here about a year ago from Portland. I'm originally from Seattle, and one of my homes is Idaho, and I spent a lot of time in Arizona. It was home for a while, but hasn't been for a long time.
Well, you've got a lot of good places to bounce around between, so that's cool.
Yep.
Well, yeah. You, first of all, I love your music. Yeah, when I was doing A&R and I came across your music, I was like, oh, this shit is really good. And I was like, I got my husband up here. I was like, you got to listen to this. This is really good.
Yay.
And we don't always agree. And he was like, this is good. And then the other night when I told him I was going to interview you, he's like, play more. And he kept playing. He's like, that is really good. Play the next one. Yay. Play the next one. Yeah, so he really liked it, which is really good that he kept continuing to want to hear what I like, because he does A&R for the station, too. He helps me out with it. But he'll listen to different stuff than what I listen to, but he really liked it. So, and then I read your bio, and you're just a really cool chick. You you push the envelope, and I like that.
Thanks.
I like that you don't do the mainstream, and I mean, your costumes, you kind of bring the whole thing. It's not just the song. You know, you kind of do the whole story.
I love costumes. I love
And I think it's so cool. I love that. You know, I live, where we live, there's a big Toyota plant, and they teach Japanese at the high school. My daughter took Japanese, and I have some friends a little bit older than her that I've made friends with through doing stories that design kimonos, and they're very much, you know, making costumes, and I love that, you know, that it's all part of the storytelling. The whole thing is not just the words. It's everything.
I have a new costume I was wearing the other night to open mic, and I asked my boyfriend, I was like, you know, does it look nice or whatever? And he was just like, yeah, I mean, sometimes I just wish you would wear a little bit more clothes. And I was like, but I'm wearing a cape.
A cape is all you need. I think it's cool. I think it's awesome that you're so cool with that, you know? And I don't know. I admire it. I really do.
When I was a kid, I think it was junior high, secretaries in the office really got a kick out of me, because I've always really liked costumes, and I was a total freak when I was a kid, like, trying out things creatively, and so, like, there's a lot of clothes that, you know, my dad did not want me to wear out of the house, because it was so ridiculous, and yet the secretaries at school just were like, please come visit us every morning, we have to know what you're wearing. So I'd go in and show my outfit, and they'd clap and say hello, and I'd go to school. But, I mean, I wore, like, yellow yarn wigs. There's even a picture of me in one of my high school yearbooks that I'm, like, dressed like a cat. It's really kind of embarrassing, but whatever.
I think for like, me and probably for the counselors and, you know, for those of us that are older, we kind of wish that we were still brave enough to do that, you know, or bold enough to do that. I do. That's for me, like, riding the bull is me being bold, you know. And I used to do theater too, so I think that's where I like the thing that you can do the costumes and just be you, you know, and express yourself.
Yeah,
and get to do that on stage.
I constantly remind myself that, you know, because sometimes I get dressed and I'm just like, gosh, I'm a total freak right now. Like, what am I doing going out in public like this? But then I just remind myself, I'm like, you're an artist, so you can do whatever you want.
Absolutely. Fly your freak flag and fly it proudly.
Yes, there's no other way.
But you design all your costumes, right?
Uh-huh, and it's all reconstructed from other pieces. Like, sometimes I'll make something totally out of raw fabric, but most of the time it's like have a box of clothes that I think are interesting because I like a ruffle or a zipper or something, and you know, just cut them all apart and sew them differently. I reconstruct a lot of wedding dresses also. I don't know when it was I started collecting them. It was a handful of years ago, but I started going to, like, the bins, like, the thrift store bins where you can buy, clothes for bulk. And I would just buy whatever, like, 30 pounds of clothes or something. And there was always wedding dresses in there, and they're so pretty with all the beads and everything. But I thought that maybe I could dye them, but you can't dye them because they're, you know, all of them are, you know, 100% polyester. So I started, like, spray painting them and cutting them apart, reconstructing them, and that's been really fun.
Next up is the song Electric Land.
Lover's hand. Soon after I'm gone, there'll be nothing to live on, save but the planet that lives close to the sun. I'm still recovering from the full moon and the howling wind. Afraid of being alone now, when no one knows my name. Oh no, no, run around in my mind, 'cause there's nowhere to hide. Run to my favorite corners of this anxious kaleidoscope, where no one can tell. My mouth begins to fade, and I am faceless as the clouds up in the sky. Simple river of pain names my anger on the joy. Free, but I'm facing life. I'm still recovering from the full moon. There's nowhere to hide. Run to my favorite corners of this anxious kaleidoscope, where no one can tell me no. Thank you.
Well, you know, speaking of unique, that leads me to another question, which is, tell everybody what Thrasher Bluegrass is and how you got pegged with that genre name by your friend and producer, tell me if I pronounce it wrong, Smoke of Old Dominion.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, there's this really awesome hip-hop collective in the Northwest. It's kind of between, like, Portland and Seattle. It's, like, a ton of different rappers, and I used to listen to them when I was in high school. Well, yeah, like, just out of high school. I always loved their music, and thought they were really cool, and because their music is, like, really arty and nerdy and kind of, like, wordplay. It's not really, like, mainstream rap is. It's very, very different. And so, just from, like, going to their shows and whatnot, I met poet who introduced me to more of them, and that's how I started working with Smoke. And so over the years I've sung on a bunch of different hip-hop records and whatnot, and so when it came time for me to that I really wanted to put out a solo album, I, you know, recorded with other bands, and I asked, you know, my hip-hop friends, like, really want to record an album and I don't have any money. So they were just like, okay, well, we'll just fit you in between sessions. So I started just recording in between sessions and, you know, giving them money whenever I had money or bringing them lunch or whatever I could do. And then, of course, like, singing on other things whenever they needed me to. And then, Smoke, we were just talking about what kind of music do I play, and people are always asking me, and I get really stumped and confused, and he was just like, you're subdued thrasher bluegrass, and I was like, you're right, because I love bluegrass. I mean, like, outlaw country,
mm-hmm.
Gillian Welch is one of my favorite musicians, and, like, I don't know, Dolly Parton, just old country, Loretta Lynn, stuff like that. It's like really great to me that has the storytelling that's just like really, I don't know, to me it seems like really simple, straightforward songwriting to like that's really emotional. And so I really relate to that aspect, and I feel like my music, that's like a common thread between all my music, even though it's very, very different, like all my songs, is it, mm-hmm. You know, I feel like it's kind of storytelling based. But I definitely feel like influenced by growing up in Seattle and being around a lot of hard rock and, you know, growing up, going to all ages concerts and watching Modest Mouse and Built to Spill and, you know, Elliott Smith and just like, I don't know, Soundgarden, all those you know, Northwest bands that were up there at the time. And so,
oh yeah,
you know, I really love like PJ Harvey and stuff like that. So I definitely feel like I get a lot more rowdy than just bluegrass music and kind of throw my voice around and kind of shout and yell a little bit. But I was also classically trained as a child. I grew up singing in the Seattle Girls Choir. And so, you know, I have at least one song per album that has a song that kind of breaks out into opera a little bit. And, you know, that just came about from wanting to try to figure out how to use my range in my writing. And so I've come up with this weird mashup of, like, you know, growing up around rock and roll, you know, being a huge hip-hop fan and a bluegrass fan, which is kind of funny because I feel like so many people when you ask them, what kind of music do you listen to? They're like, anything but rap and country, and those are pretty much my favorite genres. So,
and that's funny, because if you ask me, that would be what I would say. Anything but rap and country. And I totally dig your music and your sound. And here I am in the middle of bluegrass country, where it's born. You know, and yeah, if you came here, you'd be like, you'd be in heaven.
You could go to the
birth of bluegrass.
I want to go there so bad, and I have a friend that lives in Nashville, so I'm going to try to plan a trip for April to come out to the, like, you know, Nashville in the Midwest, like St. Louis and Chicago.
Next up is the song Hey Sister.
Hey sister, I know we had a long run. I remember you waiting for your turn for love, but it never came. And the choir sang duets in Russian lullabies and wash away our terror. Kitchen cupboard, can't eat for sin with all that measuring. And Jesus, maybe he was not your friend, but we spent time together. He watched me do everything.
So, I guess, when you were talking about recording in between their sessions and how you got it, is that how Happy Whore was born?
In that recording session?
Yes.
Yeah, I had started recording, and my plan was just to, like, do it really quickly and get these songs off my chest. I didn't even care if I played them wrong. There was all kinds of mistakes, and they wanted me to re-record it, but I was like, no, moving on, I've got to record this, it's the end of the world. I mean, not really, but, you know, just that, it was that kind of sort of drastic, like, I've got to get it off my chest. But then, like, once I finished recording a bunch of the songs, And I had wanted to call it Happy Horror because I had been in a really long relationship that went as sour as a relationship could possibly go. And my ex's mother was mad at me and left a message on my answering machine and said that I was a blankety-blank whore, and if I ever came on their property, that they were going to shoot me. So...
Wow. That's a bluegrass song.
Yeah. So I just kind of... I got out of that relationship, and I was just like... It was that comment that she had made that really just kind of... It just kind of set me off for the whole rest of the relationship. I was like, I'd much rather be happy than in this miserable relationship.
Yeah.
And your family hates me, and so this totally blows, and you're not that nice either. So I quit the relationship, and we were playing music together. I quit the band, and I started recording an album called Happy Whore, just as a, like, screw you. But then, like, in the middle of it, I actually wrote the song Happy Whore that came after. That came, like, just during the recording. So another song got kicked off, and that one got put on.
And you've recorded over 200 songs.
I don't think I've recorded 200 songs.
Or written.
I've written a lot of music. I'm sure well over 200 songs. I've recorded, this is technically, like, my seventh album. I mean, other than, like, albums I've, like, guest appeared on. I've guest appeared on, I don't know, maybe 20 albums or so, but this is my first album that I'm really excited about, that I like. I like how it turned out, even though it was, like, you know, I went into it just kind of one take, I'm done, let's go, moving on, you know, with mistakes and everything that were made on the record, and you know, my guitar at the time was kind of a piece of crap. So, you know, there's a couple tracks where, you know, there's no hiding it. It came out a little rough. But, you know, it just turned into I had more time, like, waiting until I could go and get it mixed and mastered. So I just kept adding people on it. The Shook Twins came in and played banjo and mandolin and sang. And then Adam Hurst came in and played cello. And my friend Raylan, she's a harpist, came in and did some stuff, and it just kept getting more and more fun, and so by the end of it, you know, we just had some creative editing sessions to cover up any mistakes that I made from rushing through it.
Well, and I think what I found is that so many musicians see the mistakes, and the listeners don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll be their own worst critics. They'll be like, oh, you know, the pitch was off in this, and, you know, I could have mixed this a little differently. But the listeners, they don't see those mistakes. They don't hear those mistakes. And they appreciate it and love it no matter what. And I see that, too, as a writer. You know, there's things that I would do differently, or I wish I would have taken something out or added something in. But I think you see that just because it's your own thing.
Yeah. And
I like your approach where you just put it out there. You know, you're just like, it's just time, just put it out there, just let it be. You know, I think that's where you have the most truth, and not taking something over and over again. You know, just put it out there from the get-go, and it's more true than it could ever be.
Yeah, you can pick apart something forever, and it can never be perfect, but, I don't know, I definitely threatened to, like, record an album on my phone on the voice memos, because I have so many songs that I want to get out there, and don't always have a place to record them, and, my friend Smoke, he was just like, no, don't record it on your phone, he's like, just record it on your computer, at least just get a little thing. I'm just like, I don't have any money.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's great, though, that technology has gone so far that we can do that, you know, just be out and, you know, take your phone and record something, you know, where before you didn't have that. You just had to write something down on a piece of paper, although you don't probably remember those days.
Yeah,
those days sucked.
Oh, I still write everything on paper. I still write everything on paper. I'm actually writing a song right now that it's for a film that I'm working on that this guy, the director, sent me all these emails. And this is the first time, like, it's so funny that I'm, like, actually not writing it on paper because there's so many lyrics and they're not mine that I've been, like, copying and pasting and doing it on my computer. And it feels so funny, but I know eventually I'm going to write it all down on paper because I just, the pen feels really good.
Now the title track from the EP Happy Horror.
I turn out the light, play like I'm not here. You can call me a happy whore. It's better than me well behaved and bored. Oh yeah, it's better than war. The hell do we have? Reckless abandon. I got my pack and my guitar. Scared like looking back. I will see no scars.
Hell, did we ever fight for?
I guess the next thing I want to ask you about, because I'm so intrigued by this too, is I want to ask you about the bedroom show.
Yay!
Yeah. So that's an autobiographical musical, right?
I don't even know what it is. I keep trying to say what it is. I've been working on writing down what exactly it is. I feel like I need to tell people what it is, because it's, I don't know if it's called a rock opera. I don't know if it's just called a multimedia showcase. I don't know exactly what you would call it, but, I mean, essentially it's a musical. When I was recording Happy Horror, my original plan was that I wanted to do a CD release, and I wanted to do this big show, and it was going to be sort of like my coming out as a solo artist, mm-hmm. and I wanted to have dancers, and I wanted to have film, and I wanted to have, you know, a big band backing me and all this, and I just thought that would be a really fun way to come out to the community with my new project up in Portland. And it just turned into this whole other beast. You know, I thought it was just going to be, you know, sort of a visual fun thing and play the songs. But then it got a storyline. And then the videos became their own storyline. And then, you know, there was character development. And then it got so out of control that, like, you know, it took a year and a half from, you know, the thought conception of it until the day that it was performed. And I feel like the day that it was performed was a rough draft.
Are you happy with it, though? Like, the way it came out, or?
Yeah, I mean, I was exhausted. Like, I definitely, like, when I watch the video, like, there's certain songs where you can tell I'm completely tired and exhausted, and I probably don't have, like, the best strength under my voice. I had hurt my back a month before the show, and I couldn't walk for an entire month. And I was going to rehearsals, you know, like, in a wheelchair and then being laid down on the floor so I could play guitar or try to direct the dancers and, you know, trying to explain to dancers how to do the choreography, move my body really hard.
Wow.
And so I really only had a couple of weeks before the show to, you know, to build up my strength to be able to, like, sing and dance and do all this stuff. So it's really, really intense. But I think overall, yeah, I think it's an amazing accomplishment. I'm still really shocked that I pulled it off, because it was a $20,000 show, and I don't have $20,000 just laying around.
Yeah.
So I still can't figure out how I managed to pay for it. I know there was, like, a few musicians who were just like, you're awesome, don't worry about it, you don't have to pay us. And I was like, thank God, because I don't have any money.
Yeah.
But I, you know, obviously feel indebted to those people forever now. But, you know, I had a lot of support from the community up there, with the newspapers and the radio stations, and a lot of local businesses made donations so that I could, like, feed the cast backstage. You know, different restaurants donated food and coffee and whatnot. And then as far as the costumes go, I pretty much made everything out of materials that I had in the garage lying around. And between me and my friend Carolyn, she helped me do all the sewing. We made like 30 some costumes for that show.
Wow.
Yeah, it was nuts. It was really nuts. So, you know, it was just a lot of donated labor, and like pretty much anyone who knew me during that time got wrangled into being a part of the show or volunteering. It's like, my housemates were, you know, obviously very, very generous with me paying my bills late and taking over the entire house as a sewing room and rehearsal space, because I couldn't afford a rehearsal space, and I couldn't afford to pay people for rehearsals, so I was rehearsing sometimes 6 times a day because, you know, which would end up being like 8 to 10 hours because I had to just be available for the cast, which was like 30 people, to come over and practice because I couldn't get them all together at once. So we didn't all practice together until the day the dress rehearsal, which was like a week before the show.
That's scary, but scary good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because then you're not over practicing. You know, you're getting something much more genuine in the performance.
Mm-hmm. I think it turned out great. And, of course, there's a million things I would do differently if I had a budget and some sort of support to do the show again. I hope I get to do the show again, but I've also written other shows since then that I would like to do at some point. But, you know, I'm just kind of trying to keep focused on promoting Happy Horror and that. But, by the time the show came, it took over everything, and I couldn't even release my album because I didn't have any money, so I couldn't finish it or get it printed or anything. So by the time the show came, it was supposedly my CD release, but it actually wasn't my CD release at all. I actually haven't technically even released my album yet.
No, hopefully that will come soon, you know?
I'm working on it. I gotta get it, like, on iTunes and all that. So
when did Bedroom Show come out?
May 19th and 20th, 2011.
Now, here's what I have to ask you. In doing all that, obviously you said you were trained classically, so that's where the opera probably comes in a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And you do your costumes. Were you trained in dance as well?
I took a lot of dance classes growing up. I always loved dancing. For some reason, I always had it in my head, though, that I could only do one or the other. I couldn't sing and dance. I had to sing or dance. Because I was this weird kid that felt like if you didn't focus all your attention onto one thing, that you would only be sort of good at a lot of things instead of really good at one thing. So
right.
Eventually, like, when I was little, I took ballet and tap, and then in high school I did some lyrical and modern dance and jazz dance. So I didn't have that much background because after that, I just focused on music. I was like, I got to get better at guitar, I've got to write songs, I got to get good at this. So I really focused on that for a long time. So the Bedroom Show was actually really wonderful to be able to participate in the dancing a little bit because I've always loved dancing, but I can't dance with my guitar on, so that's why the show was extra exciting to me because there's a few songs where I didn't have to play at all because I had a guitar player in the orchestra pit playing my parts, so all I had to do is like sing and run around the stage and have fun. So that was pretty exciting to me to kind of not have to do that and be able to just dance around and act pretty.
Very Lady Marmalade-ish.
Next up is the song Danger Bird.
Sleep, you keep running around in my head. Restless child begging way into my aching heart's attention. Fan above me stamps her feet, rubs her thighs and talks to me. Flamenco dancer calls to me to the dance floor. Demanding, oh, danger, danger, oh, come no nearer, dangerous bird, danger, danger, oh, come on in here. rest my desert hands over my city's eyes. Borrow darkness, forget the time. With a thin above me stamps her feet, rubs her thighs and talks to me. Flamingo dancer calls to me to the dance floor demanding. Oh,
now you have another aspect. You're so interesting. Like, I could talk to you forever. It's like, oh, I got to talk about this and this. How am I going to squeeze this in here? Because she's fascinating to me.
Aww.
You really are. It's like not just one thing. It's not just talking about your songs. Your life is just so interesting. So now I want to know about your life, your life journey, and living off the grid and just kind of the different ways in which you've lived. You know, it's so different from how so many of us have lived. I think it's so interesting. So
I definitely have a lot of friends that, you know, depend on me. You know, they live in one place and they go to work every day, so people are always really excited for me to come and crash at their house and tell them stories.
Oh, yeah. It's like, you crash here, and I'll keep you for a while, because you are, you could entertain me for forever. You're a book.
Well, and I like to cook, so people like to have me over, because I feed them.
Oh, my Lord, another bonus. It never ends.
Well, yeah, I've lived, I mean, the most far out there place I lived in the White Mountains of Arizona for a while, and that was population zero. It was 45 minutes to the nearest town driving. And that was like, yeah, I mean, I built a solar shower and I was hauling water and, you know, just lived out in a little cabin. And it was really nice. I was really, at that point in my life, I had been through so much. And I had spent, like, the year or so prior, like, really digging emotionally and facing demons and, you know, trying to learn how to be a better communicator and, you know, address my faults and figure out how to be a better person. And so once I got out to the White Mountains, it was just like, there was just so many days where I crashed to the ground and just, like, laid in the sand out in the desert and just cried into the earth. And there's just, I could cry as loud as I wanted to, and I could grieve, and I could do whatever I needed to do because there was nobody around. There's no responsibilities other than, you know, feeding and dressing myself and playing my guitar. And so it was a really, really good time for me to just let everything hit me and let myself fall apart, you know, after everything that I had learned, just to, like, allow myself to be there. That was really nice. But I've also lived in small towns various other times in my life. You know, I lived in eastern Idaho when I was a kid for a few summers, and it was like population, I don't know, 1,200. And I remember that at that point, that was the smallest town I had lived in. That was like in sixth grade or something. I remember going to, there was like a pancake breakfast for the town.
Yeah.
There was a band playing with a, you know, the washboard that was connected, or I'm sorry, yeah, the washboard, and then the bass that was connected to the tub, like one of those real country basses. And I remember looking at them and looking at my sister, and she's like, where are we? What is happening? This is insane. Because at the time, that town was smaller than the school that I went to in Seattle. So,
oh, yeah.
I'm kind of like metropolitan. Like, you know, I live in LA and it's great. And I've lived in Seattle and I spent, you know, lots of time in San Francisco. But I've lived in Austin. I've lived in Utah. I've lived, you know, in Idaho. I lived like near McCall, out in this ghost town called Roseberry, and it was population 8. The nearest town was only, you know, 5 miles, so it wasn't that bad. And I think there was like 150 people there.
Wow.
I loved it there. It was fantastic. That was fun. I just wintered there for, like, for a few winters, and then I would tour the rest of the year, and that happened for like 2 or 3 years. But I had some really good friends out there that were, they basically own and run the ghost town. And they're Finnish.
That's a cool job.
Yeah, they're Finnish, and so they have a sauna in their backyard, and so we would have, like, Sunday night saunas, and, like, you know, we'd have whatever, friends and neighbors come over, small group of people, and we would Finnish vodka, and eat Finnish chocolate, and have a sauna, and have dinner, and play games, and it was, like, the coolest thing. It was rad. It made me feel like the first time in my life, I felt like, wow, this is like a home. This is a family. This is really great. And so I definitely consider Idaho one of my homes.
Now for my choice song of the evening is a song called White Mountain Beauty. And I hope that you tuned in to Janae Giddens from Tune Talks with New Music Monday, which came on from 6 to 8 before my show. And that's when Poena made her debut on Butterflies Radio with her song Gasoline. And because it did make its debut then, I didn't play it during this show. And it is one of my favorites. But for this show, my choice song of the evening is White Mountain Beauty.
White mountain beauty exploding before my eyes. My ears can hear the nothings of silence. And while every song's been sung and every heart's been broken, I'm a saint, cause I'm a sinner, cause I'm alive. Faith and still still survive. And every time I see your face, I'm reminded of our fate. I'm a saint, 'cause I'm a sinner, 'cause I'm alive. Mountain beauty exploding before my eyes. I can smell the sweet rain upon her desert skin. And when I open up my eyes and see the sun first rise, I'm reminded just how shallow my troubles lie. Sung and every heart's been broken. I'm a saint, 'cause I'm a sinner, 'cause I'm alive.
I'm obsessed with food. Trying not to be so much now. I'm trying to exercise, watch my weight. I don't know. Still obsessed with it, though.
Me too.
I take pictures of my food, all that good stuff. But I ask everybody every week if there's a place they've eaten while touring or where they live, someplace. Everybody has a place that they've eaten just the best thing they've ever eaten, and they want to share it. Like, tell everybody, this is the place you've got to eat, and this is what you've got to have. You know, if somebody's touring or traveling through somewhere, what would you recommend?
Well,
and where?
The first thing that comes to mind is a restaurant in Seattle called the Bamboo Garden. It's a vegetarian Chinese house, and it's, like, really good. It's really, really good, but it's fun, too, because it's, like, all these, like, kosher Jews and all these, like, anarchist punk vegan kids hang out there. So it's, like, a pretty funny scene to go. But their food is really, really good. Like, the story on the menu is basically that, like, I don't know, some emperor of China at some point decided to go vegetarian for 7 years to recreate all the laws of the land or something. So he was like, I don't want to live without all these tasty things, so you have to figure out how to make, you know, vegetarian versions of them. So they had all the best chefs in the country come up with, you know, all these different things. So,
what a great story.
Yeah, so that's really fun, and it's really good. But gosh, there's, like, so many places I love to go eat. That's, like, I really like food.
I do, too. And, you know, I try to, when I travel, I try to eat locally. Because when I was in Seattle a few months ago, I was so hungry. I had taken the long way to Seattle. I had driven to Washington, D.C. for a weekend show with four musicians that I like, a private show, and then driven back to Kentucky to catch my flight to Seattle to drive to Forks. So I had been awake for, oh my God, 36 hours.
Oh my gosh.
And I think all I had eaten were gummy sweet tarts on the plane. And I get off the plane, and I was not lovely. I was hungry. I'm very pale. I was sunburned from my window seat on the plane.
Oh my gosh.
I said I needed to hydrate. Hydrate, medicate, and exfoliate, because I just looked horrible. And some of my friends on the trip, because we did 10 of us went on this trip together. Mm-hmm. But two of us had flown in that day, and some of them wanted to shop. And I was like, really? I just want to eat.
That's all I want to do when I go to Seattle is eat. There's so many good places.
Yeah, I was like, I just want to eat. And the girl with me, she's like, oh, look, there's an Applebee's. Now, she's from Australia.
Applebee's. Blah.
She's like, there's an Applebee's. And I was like, I am not eating at Applebee's.
Oh,
I said, I can eat
food.
Yeah. I said, I can eat there at home. I said, I'm in Seattle. Yeah. I want to eat at something here.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody goes, oh, there's, I have a shirt. I can't remember what it was. It was some pub. I said, oh, pub, that's where I'm going. I said, that's where you can find me.
Pub in Portland? Oh, yeah.
I got a pub there, and I took my Xanax because I was about ready to kill people at that point. I took my Xanax. I ordered a beer that they brewed there at the pub, and I had a whiskey sauce brownie. I think I passed out into my brownie halfway through it. I don't even think I finished the brownie.
Did you
and they had to carry
me.
God, what was the name of the pub? Hale's Ale. That's Hale's Ales was the pub.
Now the next song is the final song of the evening. It's called Coral Reef. And when we come back from the song, there'll be stories from the road. And I promise you, it is worth staying late for this show because it is the best story from the road I have ever heard and a lesson to be learned for all musicians out there.
A bonbon named my tiny blonde child, and she put it on my ship in Stoister. Hot line and sinking tensions in the need. Rummaged through my baggage in the cargo hold. And what you took from me can never be replaced. Well, I gained from you, I gained an Aston Square. And I fought hard to stay alive, and I got time, swimming in the coral reef she was staying. As I lay in the sea skin, I was asleep with the devil who was calling my name. And what you took from me can never be replaced. What I gave from you, I gained the Aston Square. And I fought hard to stay alive, and I got time, playing fair.
Now, my last question, this is where I know you're going to have a good answer, is I always ask if you have any good stories from the road, like from touring or anything, some interesting stories to share.
Oh, my gosh. That's such a broad question.
It is a broad question. Having to find one to narrow it down to is always fun.
Yeah. I can tell you a really scary travel story that happened.
Oh, scary travel stories. That's a new one.
There is a musician. I won't name names because he's still out there performing and, you know, whatever. But really, really unique, amazing, bizarre musician. And I was like, you're totally rad. We should go on tour. Let's go. And so I booked all these shows, and it was like a week tour we were going to do together. And at the end of the tour, we ended up in Austin, and he just kind of, like, didn't leave. I don't know, like, what he was thinking or what was going on, but he was just, like, kind of kept hanging out with me and my friends at my band that I was with at the time. And we were, like, trying to set up camp in Austin and live there for a little bit. And so we're talking, and we go to Kinko's for, you know, I don't know, print off some flyer last minute or whatever. And he said he would give me a ride. And I was like, okay, I got to, you know, tell everybody where I'm headed. And he was like, no, we'll be right back. Let's just go. And for whatever reason, I let him convince me to take off without telling anybody where I was going. Oh. And I looking at, you know, he just seemed like really pathetic the whole time. It was like every time we'd go anywhere to eat, he wouldn't order anything. So I was the type of person where I'd literally like cut my meal in half and share it. Because I was like, okay, here's a musician. He doesn't have anything to eat. I'm feed him. And you know, between me and my bandmates, we'd been feeding him, like, you know, the whole week, taking care of this guy. And I'm having a conversation with him, and I'm looking at a map, and I'm looking at a calendar, and we're, like, talking about a bunch of stuff, and he's driving. And so I just, in this conversation, I found out that not only was he not broke, but he was, like, a trust fund kid who had, like, tons of money in the bank, far more money than I've ever had. But he was just like, well, that's not really money to spend, you know. That's, like, for, I don't know what it was for.
Yeah.
You know, at that time I was, like, pretty, I mean, I've lived my life mostly pretty much, you know, some people say dollar to dollar, I would say penny to penny.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been penniless, like, many, many times in my life, literally. And so here I am, like, feeding this guy, you know, sure off my back kind of thing, and find out they has, like, you know, $100,000 in the bank. So I'm just, like, starting to get angry and confused at, like, what's going on and why would he make the pitiful, sad face that he's starving when he has all this money and he's letting us take care of him. And so I look up from my map and my papers and my things, and, you know, I had said at the beginning of the drive, like, you know, I can call or look up, like, where this Kinko's is at. He's like, no, I know where it is. It's just down the street. I'm just going to drive there. And I said, okay, so I wasn't paying attention. I look up, and we're way out of town, way out of town.
Oh.
And I was like, we've been driving for a while. Where are we? And he says, I don't know. I can't find the place. And he keeps driving and driving. And I just was like, things are not adding up all of a sudden. And we're driving out of, and I don't know where he's taking me, and no one knows where I'm at. And this is like, you know, at the time when cell phones were just kind of coming out. So I think between my whole band, we had one cell phone that we shared that one of our fans had bought us because they thought it was ridiculous for us to be on the road without a phone. So I didn't even have a phone with me. I just start demanding he pull over, and there's like this one little tiny spot you know, where there's like a laundromat and something else. There's like two or three little stores, and there's nothing else around. I was like, pull into there now. So we pull in, and he's turning around, and I'm looking at the map, and I'm, you know, trying to figure out, you know, the address and where we are, and I figured it out, and I you know, he had turned around, and he was going to take a left onto this highway road, and I looked up, and there was no cars to be seen, and there was one car that was, like, way down there, and he wasn't turning, and so I didn't think anything of it, and I was looking back at my map trying to figure out these directions, and he starts to go, and just as he starts to drive, I look up and I see that he had waited for the car to come all the way down the road, like 2 miles or so, waited until it was right in front of him, and he pulled out in front of the car. Like, there was no other cars around. He waited for the car, and we get in this huge accident, and there's a gallon of water on the floor that had smashed and, like, got my feet all wet. So I thought that I lost my feet. I thought my feet had come off because all I felt wet and the impact and the car spinning around, and I was terrified. And I looked down just like, okay, I'm in shock. There's no pain, but my feet are gone. Just look and see if your feet are gone. And I look down, my feet are still there, and I realize it's just this water has exploded everywhere. And his car is completely totaled, and this guy is like, why did you do that? Why did you pull in front of me? And I'm looking at him, and I'm like, why did you do that? Why did you wait for that car? He was like, I didn't see it. And I'm just like, this is not okay. And I'm like shaking. I'm so... And he won't let me call my friends. And he was like, no, I'll handle this. So he gets on the phone with my bandmates, and he's like, we've been in an accident. And they're like, where's Paulina? Put her on the phone. He was like, she's fine. You can't talk to her right now. And they were like, why? Why can't we talk to her? And it took like yelling and screaming for him to finally tell them where we were at. And at that point, I was so scared. I ran over to the laundromat, and I was just like, I think this guy tried to kill me. Like, I don't know what happened.
Oh, my God.
And they were just like, you know, some strangers from the laundromat were just sitting with me, waiting. And then, you know, our van that we were touring in has pulled. And he's like, my car's been told. You got to help me. You have to help me. And I'm in shock, and my friends are in shock. So we just are listening to him, and he's just like, we got to get all this stuff out of the car. We open up the trunk of his car to, like, get all of his belongings out, and there's, like, bags of food. There's, like, all these rotten apples that he's not eaten because he's been eating half of our food every day of the week. There's, like, you know, containers of juice, and there's canned food, and there's bread, and there's just, like, I mean, bags of groceries. So I'm, like, totally stunned. And then, you know, my bandmates were totally stunned because they were like, why does he have all this food? I thought he was stunned to death. So we're loading everything into the van until the van is completely packed into the point where no one even fits in the van. So I don't know what he thought was going to happen. I think he thought that he was going to wreck the car and then he'd just move right in with us, and I don't know what he was thinking. But we get, they tow away his car, and I talk to my bandmates, and I'm just like, this is what happened. I'm terrified. Like, we got to get rid of this dude now. Like, this is not okay. Like, I think he tried to kill me. I'm not sure. Either that or he just wanted to move in with us. Either way, like, whatever it is, it's totally creepy, and we've got to get rid of this dude.
So yeah.
They left us all at the laundromat because no one could fit in the van, and the one driving, and she drove the van to the auto wrecking place and made him unload all of his shit into his car, back into his car, and was like, we're not dealing with this. Then they came and picked us up, and we drove him to a coffee shop in Austin. We just dropped him off, and we were like, see you later. We don't ever want to see you again. And he was like, okay. And then, like, right after that, he sent me all these pictures that he had taken of me. Then I was wearing this white dress. I don't even remember him taking pictures, and he had, like, titled them, you know, like, Mother Mary and all this, like, creepy stuff, and, like, was, like, writing me all this weird biblical stuff about how he was a Nazarite and how I stole his power, like, the, and that basically I was the devil and I was Mother Mary all in one, and it was super creepy.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah.
Thank you all for tuning in tonight. I really enjoyed my interview with Poena so much. And because of the show, I had to edit out a lot of stuff. And, you know, if you really enjoyed what you heard, imagine what I had to cut out. I enjoyed her a lot, and I'm so glad that she spent the time talking to me and sharing everything with you guys and sharing her great music. And I'm glad she's on the rotation with Butterflies Radio, now WWIR, Worldwide Indie Radio. Tune in next week when my guest will be Natalie Duke with her song The Gift, debuted tonight on New Music Monday. I really like it. I like a lot of her music. Head on over to Reverb Nation to hear her other songs. And tune in next Monday at 8 to hear my interview with her and her music. I have a lot of good musicians lined up. And after my show with her next week, I'm heading to L.A. to hook up with Mark and Carol and a lot of great people, Mikey J, some other great musicians for the Artists and Music Awards. Look forward to it. See you guys next week. Night.